Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Business owners, call Brad Wallace and the Wallace Firm. Your insurance company may have written your policy, but they don't decide the law. For a free consultation and review of your policy to see if you are eligible for compensation or for lost revenue, 844-844-WINS or wallacewins.com. Proud partner of Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. Randall from Alhambra, appreciate you calling in, Randall. What's your idea? What do you think? What do you think would be a good representation of Kobe outside of Staples? You there, Randall? All right, let's take another call. Let's go with Chris from calling in from Norwalk. What's going on, Chris? What's your idea? All right, let's. We're 0-2, guys. 0-2. How about Manuel from Gardena? Manuel, thank you for calling in, brother. How are you doing?
Was cracking, flea stacking up the dinero, talking Lakers hoops. I love it.
Hey, man, are listen. It's crazy. It's with a 2-month hiatus or not, I'll tell you what. You talk Lakers basketball in L.A., everybody's always ready to go. So I could do this every night. No, I could do this any night. So what's your thought on this, if you had to put something out there?
Mm-hmm. Real quick, indulge me there, Sliwa. My boy Drew and I were just saying how we're very proud of you on that promo, not just bowing down to Mason and Ireland and doing the growl. That was good stuff. We're real proud of you right there, all right? First off, I just want to let
figure
you
out,
know.
Manuel, I got to figure out
cross talk. Had your back on that, all right?
I appreciate it.
Now,
thank
secondly,
you.
With the statue, I want to say, man, I think the guy who said, like, the fadeaway, that's probably got to be the best representation of Kobe. And then the way I would do it, you do the 24 in the front, the 8 on the back. So you got both numbers taken care of, and I think that's good enough, man, myself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess we'll find out, right?
Manuel, there's another idea, and I appreciate you calling in, all right? Thank you for doing that. Thank you for listening. Israel Ibanez has Kobe, if you remember, after the Lakers beat the Celtics, and Kobe grabs his 5th NBA championship as a Los Angeles Laker. And I think he's standing on the scores table, and he has both of his arms out, and his left hand is the basketball. The confetti's coming out. He's facing the Laker crowd. That's another iconic, iconic shot. Ricky Guerra at Cuban Ricky G says, how about 2 statues, 1 for each number, 8 and 24? And right next to each one of them is Kobe in the 8. And kind of has his arms down on his knees as if, you know, somebody's taking a free throw, a little bit of a fro. And then the picture right next to him is Kobe in the 24. Again, 2 fantastic, fantastic photos. But it seems like a lot are looking at this 8 and 24. Seems like we have a lot of possessions or a lot of photos here where people are putting out both in the 8 or in the 8 and the 24. At Vanessa Francesca at the VF Castro has a beautiful, beautiful photo of Kobe sitting courtside with his daughter Gigi. So by the way, there's a number of those on there that want, obviously his daughter by side with him. Let me take a few more calls here. Let's go to Chris from Westwood. Chris, appreciate you calling in, bud. You're on Alan from Newport. You're on Lakers Talk. Go ahead, Alan.
Hey, Alan, love your show, man. Listen every night. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man.
And I thought your name should be Alan Into the Night for that purpose. Just want to let you know, as far as the numbers, I would say probably it will be 8 in the front and 24 in the back. That makes more sense than having 2, because you got some iconic magic and captain over there with 1. You can't have 1, have 2 of them, as much as I love Kobe. So I think that will probably make more sense.
You know, Alan, but I'll say to that, he's got 2 jerseys up. And I think just the same thing that you just mentioned, right? How iconic, look, Magic's up there. Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy, Shaq. I don't have to tell you all the Hall of Famers for the Lakers, but there's only 1 player that has 2 jerseys up in the rafters, and that's obviously Kobe. So, Look, it's going to eventually happen, but I'm curious to get people's ideas on this because Shaq, it's like we all knew. Thank you for calling in, by the way, Alan. Shaq, we all knew that it was going to be Shaq Duncan, right? Magic or no look. Kareem the Skyhook. There's certain players where right off the bat, you've kind of envisioned what theirs will be. I think Kobe's a little bit more interesting. I think if I had to pick one, if I had to kind of narrow it down to an iconic representation of Kobe, something about that fadeaway that I like. You know, something about that baseline fadeaway that I just love. And there's a lot of people putting on here. I got two tweets in a row. Benjamin at Mamba Mentality, Benjamin number 8, number 24, so it's a long handle there, has exactly the moment where Kobe is ripping off his jersey and he's showing his heart. And then right under him, Jay Lucero, at Jason Lucero, has the same exact photo. You see Vic the Brick to his right there.
I think that should be the statue, Alan.
You think that one?
That's iconic to me. Just anytime I see a Kobe image or even think of a Kobe image or a picture, I just think about him showing his heart after a championship.
Jesse from Rancho Cucamonga. Jesse, you there, bud? We got Jesse there or no go? All right, no go on that front. So Funch, you think that's the one?
Yeah, I definitely think that's the one.
There's a lot of good ones here,
yeah,
too. It seems like if I had to say the theme that I'm seeing here the most, I'm seeing fadeaways, right? I'm seeing the Kobe 81 point, you know, showing his heart. Is that the Kobe Phoenix?
I think that might be the Phoenix game. Yeah. It was okay. A championship.
And then there's the Phoenix game where he's pumping his fist as he's slowly going down the court, right? Where Lamar is going to jump on him and Bynum's going to jump on him and everybody else. But there's also this one that I keep seeing a lot. It's Kobe after the fifth NBA championship standing on the scores table, both of his arms out.
That might be a good one too.
In his left arm, he's got the ball and he's just kind of, you know, one of his greatest moments, right?
Well, most importantly, is it going to be Afro Kobe or, you know, almost bald Kobe?
Well, look, this is a fair point that a lot of people are making here. If somebody says, which we had Alan in that last call say, well, why would Kobe get two statues? You got all these other iconic players that only got one. Well, Kobe's got two jerseys. You know, it doesn't get any more iconic than all those jerseys that you have up there in the rafters. Kobe's got two. I mean, Kobe's the only player that has two jerseys up there because what he accomplished at number 8 and what he accomplished at number 24. I'd say this. Whatever Kobe's statue ends up being outside of Staples Center, whatever that is, whatever is the best representation of Kobe. I think the best idea I've heard so far is making sure that you're representing 8 and 24. So whether you're doing that with one statue on the front, it's 8, on the back, it's 24, or you're doing it with two statues, you know, the icon, the legend, Kobe Bryant, I'm good with either one of those. Kobe had two statues outside of Staples Center. Absolutely nobody would be complaining. Just like Kobe having two jerseys in the rafters at Staples Center, nobody's complaining either. But that's a great topic that I got from this weekend, and I appreciate everybody. I'll sprinkle in these tweets as we continue to go through the show. I'll continue to read these off, and I appreciate the people who called in. We're going to change gears when we come back. Shootout's coming up next. Me and Funches, if you do want to be a part of the show, it's 877-710-ESPN. This is Lakers Talk on 710-ESPN. All right, at Otis Robbie, I can't be the only person that thinks only two statues will be suffice. I need an 8 and 24 and nothing less. Philip Aleve, standing, smiling, and waving goodbye with one arm up and a hand open. Five fingers equals five rings. Number 8 on his back, number 24 on the front. By the way, I mean, just some great suggestions. And I know for all of us, the Kobe part of this will never make sense. for all sports fans, and not even just sports fans, just in general, right? I mean, just the circumstances on January 26th, everybody that was involved, all those that lost their lives on that day, and obviously Kobe and Gigi. I could be sitting in this seat, and hopefully I am 10 years from now, and we're still doing Lakers talk. And, you know, that's always going to be a conversation that comes up, and we'll all still be scratching our heads 10 years from now. At Bowser the Great says, first he says, at Onsliwa, just hung up on me. My bad on that, Jesse. Have a rotating statue like how Iron Man had all his suits displaying. Builds a display where his statue comes and goes. Yeah, that could be another one of those ideas where you look at what is this that I saw this at? I forget where I saw it at, but I know there's some championships, you know, they rotate, right? Because you have so many of them. Lakers are certainly one of those franchises that have so many of them, and it just rotates. Doing something like that with a statue, you know, obviously it would be a beautiful thing. Okay, let me take a quick call here before we do shootout. Sean is calling in. Sean, appreciate you calling in, buddy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys always getting me on. We always get to talk the good smack and certainly appreciate it. So I think of Kobe, I think of determination, fire, hunger, just I'm going to eat you alive type mentality. So All these different ideas, it's tough because Kobe has to do something that he's the only one that's done. So all these ideas were great, but I would go with the fist pump. I would go with 8 on the front, 24 on the back. I'm biting my bottom lip. I'm making that like I'm going to eat you alive look. And I feel like that is the one that's going to best resonate with Laker fans. We'll never forget it. He is the true Mamba. He lives forever.
Nah, that's great, Sean. Sean, that's a great suggestion. Listen, we'll take ideas throughout the show. So if you guys have some ideas, feel free to call on the show or continue to hit me on Twitter. So I appreciate you guys doing that. Let's get some shootout started. All right, shootout presented by the Wallace Firm. Business owners, call Brad Wallace and the Wallace Firm. Your insurance company may have written your policy, but they don't decide the law. For a free consultation, call 844-844-WINS and have them review your policy to see if you are eligible for compensation for lost revenue. 844-844-WINS or visit wallacewins.com, proud partner of Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. Funches, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. How are you? How was the weekend to you, man?
Man, weekend was really, really nice. Got a chance to go down to San Diego. Just a quick trip. Honestly, those trips are like 24 hours and then back up here. Sedano and I are doing those Last Dance recaps.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we've been doing that. And, only one Last Dance to go. And that's it, buddy.
I was watching the 98 All-Star game before the Last Dance yesterday. Mm-hmm. Kobe, young Kobe versus MJ. And this is where that All-Star game where MJ was in the back, you know, saying that little Laker kid wants some, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was awesome to see, man.
You know what I saw recently? Was this Saturday night? So I didn't know even ABC is re-airing games. Did you know that?
Yeah, everyone is.
So ABC was re-airing Game 7 Cavs-Warriors. Or no, actually, I'm sorry. They weren't replaying that. They were replaying the game, I want to say 2018, Cavs Warriors, where KD hits that big time shot.
Oh yeah,
probably from 30 feet away.
This is KD's first championship, right?
It might have even been his second. I think 2018 was his second. 2017 was the first one where he had another big time shot with that pull up over LeBron. But that's when they went up 3-0 over the Cavs. Also got to see the J.R. Smith dribble out the clock when it's tied in the finals. Game one, LeBron had 51 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists. J.R. Smith forgot that the game was tied. So, you know what? Actually, you know what's crazy, Funch? When you think about how outmatched the Cavs were, and that I don't want to say they hung in some of these games, because I know, you know, when you look at the series as a totality, they, you know, definitely got beat up. Who did LeBron have? He didn't have anybody.
No, really was that the year? Anybody. Was that the year when Kevin Love and Kyrie were injured?
No, that was when Kyrie is gone.
Ah, yeah.
And the first year, Kevin Love and Richard Jefferson and Amon Shumpert
and George
Thompson,
Hill.
and you're trying, and George Hill, and you're trying to go up against KD, Clay, Steph, and Draymond, and Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, JaVale McGee. I'm like, this, they had absolutely no chance in that finals run.
Yeah, unless LeBron scored like 50 points a game.
He did. And then they still lost. J.R. Smith. Because J.R. Smith. But you know what? You know what's forgot about that moment? I know you got a lot of good shootout questions to get into, but I wanted to take you back this for a quick second. So that game one that they lost, where LeBron put up 51-8-8, and they went into overtime because J.R. Smith forgot that the game was tied, right? A couple things went on in that game that changed the scope of that game. Do you remember when Kevin Durant, the possession before, went to the basket and LeBron stepped in front and took a charge, and they called a charge, and they went back and reviewed the charge and they reversed it? Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
I forgot about it, but I remember at the moment, I'm like, this is a series altering move. It's
sure
the only play in the rule book that you can over, you can look back and change a foul call.
They should change that rule. They should really
change. This is not the time to do that.
That's like the pass interference rule in the NFL that they just changed back.
Yeah, it was a bad look. That would have gave the Cavs the ball with about 26, 28 seconds left and up two. Instead, KD tied the game with two free throws, and then all that other stuff played out. So. Is what it is. Let's get some shootout going.
All right. Well, speaking of LeBron,
everything's good.
Thank you, LeBron. Everything is good over here, man.
LeBron, we need you back. We got to get basketball back, and then everything will be good.
All right. So, Caron Butler was on a Barstool Sports podcast when he was asked about his addiction to Mountain Dew.
When was the last time you had some Mountain Dew?
I don't f*** with that no more, bro. Like, I'm serious.
You're an addict. You're a full-blown addict.
Man, I was a full-blown addict, man, with the Mountain Dews, bro. Like, I went through, like, withdrawals with this shit. Like, seriously. People don't understand, like, I used to have a liter, like, just in my locker. Like, cold as hell, bucket of ice. Bro, yo, that was the rookie hazing. Like, I used to send the rookies, I'd be like, yo, give me a handful of straws and a Mountain Dew. They'd be like, a Mountain Dew? I'm like, yes. Go give me a Mountain Dew. And watch me score 20.
Go give me Mountain Dew. Watch me score 20. All right. Butler even admitted that he tried to hide his habit from Kobe when he was a Laker with Kobe, even hiding his Mountain Dew from him on the locker room and on a bus. And every time
Kobe, so random,
Kobe would see him with his Mountain Dew, he would just shake his head in disgust. Sliwa, what junk food are you currently addicted to now or was to before?
Junk food. Well, that's a great question. You know what I used to eat a lot of?
What's up?
Doritos were so bomb.
Oh,
cool,
yeah.
Ranch.
Oh,
cool
my
Ranch
goodness.
Doritos. Yeah. Even the nacho cheese. And I don't eat that stuff as much anymore. Like, I find other ways to get that craving.
Well, you're not hitting up the vending machine here for them Doritos?
No, I'm not. I can't do it, man. Because if I end up doing it, you know, you got that. You don't want to get into eating that junk. And then the older you get, just the more that you know, like, okay, that's not a good idea. I have a different type of option. But I used to always have Cool Ranch Doritos. Snickers used to be my candy bar. What was your go-to candy bar?
Snickers. I mean, even now, Snickers, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, bro.
And like M&Ms, if I just really just are trying to like stretch out the bag and all day or whatever. Like if I'm trying to eat candy all day, I guess like a little bit here and then a little bit in a couple of hours or whatever. You know what I mean?
Is there something else that you're addicted to just other than that?
Anything.
I eat late at night. I think I'm addicted to eating late at night.
I think it's just, I used to be addicted to soda a lot. I used to drink a lot of soda before I got into like a diet maybe 6 or 7 months ago and started losing weight and stuff like that. And I saw me just dropping a lot of pounds, just not drinking soda, man. And that kind of like kept up, you know, my diet and not drinking soda, but I do indulge, you know, every once in a weekend, like a can of soda, a can of Coke or whatever. You know what I mean?
I wasn't big into soda. Soda, I was okay with. That wasn't too hard. And now if I drink sparkling water, it's like you get that carbonation you're looking for, that fizz that you're looking for. You know what I mean? But I wasn't that big into soda. What's a drink I used to always drink? When I was drinking soda, Sprite. I liked Sprite and 7-Up. Sprite and 7-Up were my go-tos.
And as far as junk food for me, like anything with peanut butter and chocolate together, like, it's over, man.
That's Reese's in a, you just described Reese's peanut butter cup. So, okay,
Reese's
so
pieces, anything, dude.
But that's so random that somebody like Caron Butler, remember Dwight would say this? It's when you hear athletes that are in unbelievable shape and here they are, you know, performing on the highest level and they look like they have 2% body fat. And then you hear, I guess Dwight used to be a big candy guy.
Yeah. Remember? And I also like heard he was a big McDonald's guy, a big McDonald's chicken McNuggets guy.
So he used to eat all this junk like back in the days, even when he was performing in Orlando. But now he doesn't. Now he's as strict on a diet as you can possibly get. And that's probably why he's able to have success this season and kind of continue to prolong his career. How about Chris Paul? Didn't Chris Paul go vegan and he went all plant-based?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
he went
forward.
I think in the last year he went all vegan. And he's just having his best year before we had the, you know, the pandemic.
It is interesting because these guys, and it's not too much different than you and I, right? Like, you and I, whatever we're eating at age 21 is much different than we're eating now, right? It's
yeah, yeah.
Almost the same with alcohol. It's like, man, whatever you thought you could do with alcohol, whatever you were doing at 22, 23, 24, whatever, you try to do that now, bro, I'll be hungover for 2.5 days.
Man, I remember when I started here at the station in my mid-20s, man, I had the breakfast of champions. I had like Ding Dongs and Twinkies for breakfast with like a Coke.
That's so funny. That's such a good idea. That's such a good idea.
That makes me happy.
LeBron, it does make me happy. Ho-hos and ding-dongs do make me happy.
Nothing wrong with that.
Kyrie Irving was on the IG when he was asked about who he would want to go one-on-one with, and he said this.
Oh, we never talk about this. Me and K-Walk. I want that matchup.
Hold up.
K-Walk. Me
hold
and K-Walk.
Yo, Barry, say that one more time.
Me and K-Walk. That's my matchup. I want K-Walk. That's my big bro. I want K-Walk, bro.
So Sliwa, Kyrie versus Kemba. Who you got?
By the way, I love that. Michael Thompson always says in the pregame show that how much he hates the way there's so many politically correct answers now, right? Lakers are about to play the Clippers, and you'll hear head coach Frank Vogel say, this is just another game, and Michael Thompson hallucinates. He's like, it's not just another game, right? But he's also talking about how he loves the storylines. He loves when, you know, we can also hype up a game even more. Kyrie is no longer in Boston. Kyrie chose to go to Brooklyn. And I think the Boston Celtics are very happy to have Kemba Walker and not to have Kyrie Irving. Kyrie's time in Boston obviously didn't work out as planned. I love the idea of that Eastern Conference, Kyrie Irving wanting to go at Kemba. Here's going to be the only issue. Now, I'm sorry to burst everybody's bubble. Who do you think is going to guard Kyrie Irving?
Kemba.
Think will be Kemba? Or you think they'll probably put like Marcus Smart on him or something?
Probably. Yeah, you know what? Marcus Smart. Yeah, yeah. Marcus
I think they're going to put Marcus on him.
Yeah, or Jaylen Brown, just for the length.
But just even from a guard perspective, right? And I know you want me to answer the question, so I'll answer the question. Who would I pick between Kyrie Irving and Kemba?
Yeah.
If I need a bucket, I'm going for Kyrie Irving. If I need some team ball, I'm probably going Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker's a better fit in Boston than Kyrie Irving was. But he's a better fit because Tatum is there. You know, obviously Marcus Smart is there. Gordon Hayward is there. Or Gordon Hayward's there. What am I forgetting? Who am I forgetting? Who's the player that you just said?
We have Jaylen Brown.
Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Okay, so they got a lot of weapons, so they don't need just one player, right? So I don't think they need – they obviously just don't need one person to attack. But Kyrie, listen, Kyrie's the better player. He's going to be a great fit in Brooklyn, but Kemba is a better fit in Boston.
I think a little bit of this little, you know, matchup that's going on or this little beef that's going on between Kyrie and Kemba has to do with Kemba basically taking over Kyrie's role in Boston. And he's kind of doing a better job than Kyrie ever did, if you think about it.
A lot of it is fit. You know, somebody could have little success at one location and then move to another team and all of a sudden it's just a better fit and everything starts clicking. Kemba's a better fit for the Celtics.
Go ahead. I agree with that. Like Kemba is the better fit, the better team player, and Kyrie was just a guy that went one-on-one all the time and would bail out, you know, his team every once in a while.
Okay, so Kyrie in Cleveland, that was a great fit because you had LeBron James, who we all know. I saw something today on First Take. There was a conversation of who would you rather be a teammate of, LeBron James or Michael Jordan? And they said, the first thing they said was, well, it depends on what kind of player that you are. For Kyrie Irving, the perfect fit for Kyrie was LeBron. LeBron's got no problem dishing the ball. LeBron's got no problem saying, you want to take that final shot, take that final shot. And that played to Kyrie's strengths. If Kyrie and Michael Jordan were on the same team, of course Michael's going to take all the shots, but Kyrie would feel like, no, I could do this too. It just wouldn't be a good fit. So I'm going to just go back to what I said earlier. The right fit for Kyrie is going to be in Brooklyn. It wasn't the right fit in Boston.
I'll say this. One-on-one, I think Kyrie will beat Kemba. But right now, winning the Kyrie and Kemba situation thing is Kemba. With, you know, Boston has a better record and Kyrie's on the bench right now in Brooklyn.
Let's see how KD and Kemba do. Or KD and Kyrie do once, you know, next season comes along and they'll both be fresh and ready, especially if a season doesn't start till Christmas or something along those lines. And that's when we'll get kind of a great gauge on both of those players for both of those teams. But I like where they both fit right now. I really do. I think Kyrie will do well in Brooklyn. Plus, he's really close with KD. And I think Kemba will continue to have success under that system.
I totally agree with you.
Absolutely.
And LeBron agrees with you, too.
Thank you, LeBron. Thanks, buddy.
Speaking of KD, it looks like Kevin Durant could be returning soon. We've seen clips of him on social media looking like he's 100%. Where, you know, we've seen clips of him on social media, blah, blah, blah. And he could make a return this year if the season could get underway. But our own Adrian Wojnarowski shot this down this morning.
What was a concern this year, right, was injuries to star players. Now, Steph Curry got injured because he landed on his hand and broke his hand. There's nothing you could do about that. But what about in a shortened preseason? And I know they're thinking about this. If you really want to hurt TV ratings next year, let's rush everybody back this season. Let's get key players injured and now have to hold them off, have their starts pushed back. I mean, guys, Kevin Durant's not coming back to the Nets this year. That's not happening. If they play, they're not playing him.
Alan, if you're the Nets owner, do you allow KD to come back this season?
Well, I think it's apparent to them. They're not going to do it. And I had said this. I said, if he's healthy, if he's good, if he's 100% healthy.
He looks 100% in those clips, I'm telling you. And people around the Nets organization and the press, they think he's 100%.
If Woj is saying he's not coming back, then that's obviously a decision that they're just saying, we want you out for a full 12 months or even more than that, because that will extend much further once we get into – he got injured in June. So if they don't come back until December, that means he'll have been, you know, 18 months off or something along those lines. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. I was mentioning this last week. If you're healthy and you can go and he wanted to go, great, fantastic. Only if he's healthy. But if he is healthy and he's not going – I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. I think they just feel like there's nothing to play for this year, even though they'd be going up against Toronto in the first round. And I think you put KD on any team, all of a sudden that team does have a chance, especially in the Eastern Conference.
Let's just say KD does come back. Kyrie comes back. Doesn't that, you know, Toronto, Brooklyn matchup in the first round? They got a shot at beating Toronto, right? They got a big time shot, right?
No. Listen. If KD came back as KD and Kyrie comes back as Kyrie, even if Kawhi Leonard's still on that team, they still have a shot. Like it's Kevin Durant and it's Kyrie Irving with Spencer Dinwiddie and a couple, you know, obviously decent players on that
team. DeAndre Jordan.
No question about it. They would have a shot. That's why I was a little surprised when, you know, some kind of shot down the idea. I was like, well, they'd have a chance in the Eastern Conference if he's healthy.
I think any team in the Eastern Conference has a shot, you know. Even at Milwaukee, you know, Milwaukee could have a bad series. They could get an injury and, you know, anything could happen.
By the way, you know, in this playoffs, if it does happen, it doesn't even have to be an injury. I'm telling you, Funch, I don't know what they're going to do about this, but the circumstance could definitely pop up. If somebody if somebody tests positive for COVID-19, they're going to be out for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And if it's a significant player, there's a good chance that that team is going to be eliminated. So the whole thing's going to be funky if we get that opportunity to play, you know, play the rest of the way. But I'm not with Shaq about scrapping the season. I'm with Adam Silver saying, give us some time. We still have, you know, let's say about 30 days left to make a decision. Use every day until you're forced to 100% not get that opportunity. No need to make a decision now.
I agree.
I mean, we're going to see. We'll see.
That is right, LeBron. We're going to see. All right, Pau Gasol was recently interviewed by Clutch Points when he was asked about a potential return to the Lakers. Now, Gasol said, it's something that has been on my mind, kind of like a potential maybe finishing or playing my last year with the Lakers would be great. It's appealing, if you will, but the opportunity never really kind of presented itself in a serious, official manner. I have a great relationship and love for Jeannie and the Laker organization in the city of Los Angeles, which is always going to remain extremely meaningful to me no matter what, but we'll see. Alan, give me your feelings on a potential return by Gasol.
So, this is the tough part. He is 100% one of my favorite Lakers. How can you not love Pau Gasol? Soft-spoken, came to Los Angeles, helped turn the franchise around. Kobe Bryant always used to talk about how important Pau Gasol was for the Lakers winning in 2009. And, of course, in 2010, beating the Boston Celtics. How the Lakers did it. He's matching up against KG. That iconic moment in Game 7 where I think Pau Gasol, I think he traveled. I think his foot touched the ground. But he scored, gave the Lakers kind of a little bit of a cushion. The momentum was going. Pau was so big for the Lakers. I would be open to that. Here's the problem. The problem is this, Funch. Typically when you do these, like, you want players to be a part of your team because you want to pay the respect that they've done in the past, you're not competing for a championship. The Lakers right now are competing for a chip. So what the Lakers have to think of is if Pau Gasol can help them win a championship, then I'm good. But if he can't and he's just there to kind of wave into the crowd and everybody to share their love, I don't know if you could use that roster spot for a 40-year-old Pau Gasol if he's not going to help you win a championship. Again, I'll go back to this. If he can help, love the idea. But if it's just a farewell tour, not a good idea. It's not a good idea because the Lakers are this close to number 17. And if they get number 17 this year, whether they got it or they didn't, whether they had that opportunity or they didn't, next year is going to be just as important with Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and you know, LeBron towards the end of his career. So I love Pau, but it's got to be for the right reasons. He can't come for a farewell tour. It would have to be he's taken up a roster spot because he can help the Lakers win a chip.
I think he can come back. I really think he can come back, Alan. I mean, not this year.
And help?
I think he could. I mean, he's 40 years old. He's got a lot of knowledge of the game.
He does.
And get this, man. Like, JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard and Anthony Davis aren't going to be back on the same team next year. You're going to have to choose between McGee and Howard, I think, you know, in offseason. So there's your third center right there in Pau Gasol, who gets to, you know, not play so much, but he does get to communicate with the team, you know, and tell them, give them pointers and all that stuff. Maybe be an assistant coach on a bench, sort of, you know?
Well, listen, it's I think it just literally goes down to this. If the front office thinks and the players, you know, the key players, LeBron and Anthony Davis, think, hey, he can help us, then no Laker fan's going to be like, no, don't bring Pau back. But you just want to make sure he comes back for the right reasons because the Lakers are competing for a championship, right? And you don't get too many opportunities to compete for one. We know how long it's been since the last time we have competed for one. It's just got to be the right reasons. Who knows? Maybe the Lakers, maybe there's opportunity for DeMarcus Cousins again next year. Like, you just don't know, right?
I totally forgot about him.
You just don't know what players would give you the best chance to win, and we're so far from
that. And also, we don't know what the offseason market might look like. You know, there might be another guy that might fit with the Lakers even better than Pau, Dwight, DeMarcus, and JaVale that might become available. So we don't know.
You know what's crazy is I haven't thought of last season at all, right? Or I'm sorry, next season
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
There's just been no reason.
We're still
to
in
yet.
This season, technically.
Exactly. Exactly. Still in this season. And, you know, from a sports perspective, football can be thinking about next year. College football can be thinking about, you know, this upcoming season. But for baseball, they're trying to just get the season starting. The NBA, they're just trying to finish this season. It's a tough one to kind of think anywhere down the road right now, Funch, just because the Lakers were in such a, you know, fantastic spot when everything just stopped. We'll see if they get their chance to, you know, obviously finish off the season.
That's ridiculous.
No, it isn't, LeBron. No, it isn't.
LeBron hated that point. LeBron hated that
All
point.
Right, a couple weeks ago was the 22nd anniversary of one of my favorite basketball movies and just one of my favorite movies in general. Spike Lee's He Got Game, starring Ray Allen as Jesus Shuttlesworth and Denzel Washington as his ex-con dad, trying to make him go to the college of that he wants to go or that he wants his son to go to so he can get out of jail. With that, what are some of your favorite basketball movies of all time, Alan?
All right. Okay. So White Man Jump, White Men Can't Jump obviously has to be in the conversation. All right. Blue Chips is another solid one.
Blue Chips. Butch McRae. Oh, Penny Hardaway.
By the way, yesterday, I got a couple more in mind, but how cool was that yesterday when they're doing The Last Dance and Michael Jordan says, okay, well, if I'm going to do Space Jam, he says, if I'm going to do Space Jam, I'm going to need a gym built here. I got to be training. I got to, you know, make sure I'm getting runs in. And then eventually, before you knew it, there's Michael Jordan with Patrick Ewing, with Charles Oakley.
Juwan Howard.
Reggie Miller. All these big time players are playing on the studio lot at the times where Michael Jordan, you know, obviously isn't recording or anything like that.
Yeah, they're saying that like he had an insane schedule. Like he would wake up like at 6 or 7 for a call time around that time and then, you know, shoot for like 12 hours. And then like after 7 o'clock, they would play basketball pickup games for like 3 or 4 hours.
And then he would lift after that.
Yeah.
So
crazy
there was
insane.
Michael Jordan. So that was. That was obviously on the set of Space Jam. But listen, Hoosiers, every time I see Hoosiers, I'm like, God, this is the greatest movie ever. What am I missing?
He Got Game, Above the Rim. Were you Above the Rim guy?
No, not crazy about it. But you know, it's obviously.
What? Good, you don't like Tupac?
This guy just said I don't like Tupac. Just because I wasn't crazy about Above the Rim, all of a sudden I don't like Tupac. You know what movie kind of comes to mind, which is such a stupid movie, but it's freaking hilarious? Semi-Pro.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
How funny is Will Ferrell, man? He's the owner. He's the broadcaster. He's also a player.
He's also just like the halftime entertainment.
Oh, gosh, the guy's the best. What else did I miss? Did I miss anything else? Those are the ones that...
White Man Can't Jump. Do you remember Sunset Park, Alan?
No.
Okay, it was a movie with Fredro Starr from Onyx, and it was a high school basketball movie. Rhea Perlman, who was in Cheers, she played their coach.
Mm.
Yeah, check it out, man. It's a really good soundtrack. It's a really good 90s hip-hop soundtrack.
Okay, I'll have to try that. But yeah, those are the ones that stand out.
And obviously Space Jam, too, Space Jam 1.
Space Jam 1 and, you know, hopefully Space Jam with LeBron sometime soon as well.
All right, Alan, that is all I got for you, brother.
All right, brother. Thank you. Thank you, Funches. I promoted it a little bit earlier in the show. I'll promote it again. Really appreciate John Greenberg. He has an article in The Athletic. We were raking it in, what life was like in the Michael Jordan economy. So this is the conversation that comes out of the article. There's been such an impact from Michael Jordan since he came into the league to even now. I mean, economically, back in the days, the Chicago Bulls, he'll go through some of the numbers of how things changed once Michael Jordan became a Chicago Bull. And obviously, as his career grew, how much money was being made from everybody. And even on top of that, we look today. I'm seeing a highlight right now, and it's showing The Last Dance on ESPN. They're promoting the hell out of this thing. I know it has its sponsors. I know it's getting its TV ratings. I know I'm obviously spending a lot of time talking about it. So the impact Michael Jordan has had and is still having economically in the world of sports, we'll do all that coming up next. John Greenberg from The Athletic. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Lakers Talk. We'll continue our conversation here. Staying in the NBA, obviously The Last Dance, another two great episodes yesterday. We got two more episodes left. Want to welcome in John Greenberg. Got a great article right now in The Athletic. We were raking it in, what life was like in the Michael Jordan economy. John, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. Everything is good. And we continue to, I know, focus a lot on this documentary. And it's been, you know, it's been fascinating. And I love reading articles like yours. You know, just kind of something that has a little bit different of a twist to it. And it's not just reacting to what we just saw. I'll let you kind of get a little bit into it. But for those who haven't got a chance to read it, can you give just a quick little overview of your article right now in The Athletic?
Yeah, sure. You know, I kind of got the idea, like, I think from a Steve Kerr quote he gave on the radio here, and I think he's kind of given it, he's done like 50 interviews in the past month, so he's probably given it a couple times, but he basically just talked about how everything in his life is that's gone well is attributable to playing with Michael Jordan, everything since 1990, you know, the late 90s. Everything is attributable to playing with Michael Jordan, right? You know, he gets discovered. He's in a big stage. He goes to the Spurs. He goes out. He becomes a GM. He goes on TV. Then he gets the Warriors gig. And he said he joked that he and Jed Bushler, another, you know, reserve on that team, they would toast to Michael Jordan all the time. So I thought about all the other people that have, you know, Jordan has made so much money for so many people. And I didn't just want to focus on Nike because that's boring. It's been done. Mm-hmm. You know, or the other sponsors he's had. But, you know, just on like, how he's made money for everyone around him, from his trainer, Tim Grover, to my friend, Sam Smith, who wrote that great book, The Jordan Rules, to the Bulls themselves, you know, who weren't like a major marquee attraction before he got there and were still selling out for years after he retired when they had garbage teams. And, you know, I talked to a couple other people. I talked to local TV guys who were, you know, who were just riding on Jordan's coattails in the 90s. And just like, and it just made me think about how now, like what you said, we're talking so much about this documentary. This isn't even like we're doing ESPN. I mean, you work for ESPN, but, and I used to work for ESPN, but we're like, everyone is doing ESPN's job in promoting their product right now. Right. Because there's nothing else to talk about. So it's like perfect. This is just so perfect in the sense that Michael Jordan is once again rescuing like the media world and the media ecosystem just hit by his very existence. So that's where I got the idea for the story.
John Greenberg from The Athletic, great article right now. Just talking about the economic impact Michael Jordan has had and still is having, obviously on the global brand. So, John, can you take us back? I think there's some details in your article. Take us back to the 80s and the impact Jordan was having on ticket sales. And I know you tell the story of how mm-hmm. ticket sales were going prior, how ticket sales obviously go after Michael Jordan starts becoming Michael. They draft Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant's on the team. What are some of those impacts that he was having?
Well, you look at, if you want to just look at total attendance, the year before Jordan got there, they averaged about 6,000 a game. And I bet a lot of those were freebies, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple thousand are probably freebies. They just weren't anything. They were good in the 70s. You know, they were a really successful expansion team in the 60s. Had some good moments in the 70s, and then it kind of fallen off by the early 80s. And immediately Jordan has a huge uptick. But by 87, this guy named Steve Shanwell comes in to start, you know, run their department. You know, then they're around like 11 and then 15,000. And then all of a sudden it's 18,000 a game, you know, by 87, 88. And, you know, then there's a season ticket waiting list. And then they're selling sponsorships in multi-year packages. The Bulls build the United Center with the Blackhawks. You know, the Wirtz and Reinsdorf both on the teams. They build this, you know, this super nice, it's still a nice place. You know, monstrous arena that seats over 20,000, the biggest one, I think, still in NHL and NBA. And, you know, they're selling everything in multi-year deals because of Jordan. And it's just like, it was like nothing you've ever seen before. I mean, just the ticket demands were insane everywhere. And, you know, the celebrities that wanted to come. And like I said, they started, it got to be so good. They were just planning. They were planning on what was going to happen when Jordan retired. So they were just worried about their customer service and things like that. And they actually kept selling out for the first few years after he retired, started taking a little dip. They became competitive again and it went back up. And just the Jordan, you know, that residual effect from Jordan, you know, I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf bought a majority and his partners bought a controlling stake in the team for $9.2 million during Jordan's rookie year. And wow. You know, by 88, his agent, David Falk, theorized that Jordan was making the team $40 million a year. This is before the titles. So, I mean, what a payday that is that Michael Jordan was for this, you know, this franchise, Jerry Reinsdorf's baseball franchise, the White Sox, has never had, like, consistent fan success, like, as far as ticket sales and things like that, whereas the Bulls have paid off their, you know, the people, the investors in that team, I don't know how many times over.
So, John, how did they, I guess, trying to figure this out, when Jordan, when his agent, David Falk, was negotiating, you got a piece of this in 1988, they're negotiating, his agent's negotiating with the front office. How did they try to equate Jordan's worth? Because I think, you know, we could use this as an example, being out here in L.A., and we see the impact LeBron James, of course, has on this Los Angeles Lakers brand, but it's different. The Lakers brand is right. The Lakers brand. You know, that's also humongous. But the impact LeBron was having in Cleveland, I don't think there's a dollar amount you can put. If the max he can make is $30+ million, we know that really he's right. Worth much more than that. How are they equating Jordan's worth back in those days?
Well, that's what's crazy. You know, I got that part from David Halberstam's fantastic book, Playing for Keeps, which is basically, if you've read it, it's basically the narrative structure they're using in the documentary. They've almost completely borrowed it from that. You know, it's the numbers were so different then. So, yeah, Falk was saying, you know, we think he's bringing you $40 million a year. We're asking for $4 million a year. And Jerry said, that's too much money. I won't pay it. So they settled for 8 years, $26 million. And the funny thing in that conversation, which I assume was, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf and David Falk were probably telling David Halberstam this, and not Jerry Krause, because Jerry Krause looks really bad in the recounting of the conversation. Because Jerry Krause was like, yeah, he's good. But, you know, what credit do you give to the six women we just hired to work in the ticket office? And, you know, scout Billy McKinney is everywhere, and Doug Collins is dreaming up new plays, you know, in bed. And David Falk just goes, I give them zero credit. Like, what's your next question, Jerry? And apparently Reinsdorf's like, Jerry, just shut up. Like, this is what we're going to do. You signed for way too many years, because I don't think even Jordan realized, sure. You know, or David Falk realized the salary bump that was coming. You know, Glenn Robinson, what he got out of Purdue before they did rookie caps, and Kevin Garnett, when his first one came down. But Jordan was making God knows how much in his endorsement portfolio, you know, every year, $30 million, who knows. So Jordan didn't get paid until those last two championships. He was like the sixth highest paid person, you know, during that 72-10 team.
Yeah, that's shocking. Isn't it interesting now when you start seeing a lot of these contracts where the shorter term deals, and I'm not saying, of course, there are players out there that will sign their 5-year max, and not all players right. Are obviously Michael Jordan or LeBron James or Kevin Durant, some of these big time players, but it is interesting because there are clauses now in a lot of these contracts. I think Kawhi Leonard and Paul George with the Clippers, aren't they 3-year deals? You know, or an option after 3 years. You know, LeBron's got an option after 3 years. I think there's a lot more leverage that goes towards players, probably because of these deals. You know, we talked about the Jordan, the Scottie Pippen, use those two as examples. They were such long deals, and I know you can't sign deals right. Like that anymore, but they didn't give the player his true value. I thought another interesting point that I'd love for you to explain to listeners. John Greenberg from The Athletic joining Lakers Talk. You had this portion that explained the idea of doing these pregame and postgame shows and what they started doing from everyone's making money off Michael Jordan. It's not going to certainly these TV networks, and I'm sure these radio broadcasts are going to try and take advantage of the opportunity as well. Can you talk a little bit about that as far as what happened from a TV perspective?
Yeah, so this is back in the NBA and NBC days, and NBC 5 in Chicago was probably like number two. I mean, it was competitive with the ABC station, but it was a clear number two. And from what I didn't even get into this totally, but you know, ABC had Wheel of Fortune, and NBC, like the 6:37 slot, couldn't sell advertising. Well, all of a sudden, they decide, I think during the 91 season, during the playoff games, they were going to do a pregame show around that time. And, you know, they started getting about five times as much as they normally would get for per 30-second commercial. You know, they start getting like $5,000 in the 6:37 slot per 30-second commercial. They're jamming 16 30-second commercials in, you know, maybe 32 if they got the full hour show and they preempted the network. Mm-hmm. So this is NBC. They're doing a local show, and it's a local anchor named Mark Giangreco, who's still a big name here, works for ABC now. And he's hosting with Dick Versace. You know, they got a national guy to do it with them. So they're doing pre- and post-game shows, and they're just raking money in. Because the Bulls at that point, I mean, the idea before then of having a Bulls pregame show would have been crazy. You know, that's what you do for Bears games. But all of a sudden, the Bulls were the Bears, and they started doing it starting in that 91 season and basically through, you know, till Mark left. I don't know if they did him for the second three-peat, but he left for the second three-peat. But that first three-peat, they were doing them for every NBA on NBC game, and they were doing all the playoff games. And they said they were just making money hand over fist. There's a great anecdote in there from the producer saying, Bob Vorwald, who became a famous Cubs producer, saying they walk in the newsroom after the Bulls beat the Lakers in the finals, and they get a standing ovation. And then they're told they have a two-hour show the next day. So don't rest, because there was plenty of money to be made on Michael. And this really an interesting part of that too, and I think your audience will really appreciate this, mm-hmm. is the TV days were different back then. I don't know what it's like there now, but it's just not as competitive in Chicago for TV news, just because it's very difficult to break news on television anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not saving it for the 10 o'clock, right? Everything's on Twitter, everything's instant. Can't save breaking news anymore. But Mark said back, and a lot of people have told me, back in those days, TV news was you know, harsh, sharp elbows competitive. Mm-hmm. Because he's like, my GMs and my producers demanded that we have exclusives. And we're fighting for exclusives, you know, with Jordan, with Pippen, with, you know, with Krause, with Reinsdorf. And, you know, that was like a big deal back then. And that's what they expected from you. So, you know, to get a Bulls exclusive was everything in life for these people. So it wasn't just fun. It was tense for them.
Yeah, it seems, by the way, it seems like your title is perfect, right? We were raking it in when you're talking about the impact Jordan is having on from an economic standpoint. But I like getting those examples because it's more than just the Gatorade commercial. It's more than just the Nike commercial like you were talking about. These are your local affiliates, your local businesses, and it equates more to what was going on in Chicago at that time. I'll kind of, you know, you mentioned this, that we're still getting that Michael Jordan effect. What is that Michael Jordan effect you still see today, just based upon what, you know, this article that you're doing, and you look back, is it as simple as just saying, look what you've been doing for the last month? That's a good enough example of the impact Jordan still has.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, just, you know, how many stories, like, you know, we have so many writers at The Athletic, and so many people in other markets are doing Jordan stories. You know, I don't even know. I should be a little more organized in seeing who's got what, because sometimes we don't even know what's coming out. You know, our writer, Michael Lee, who's a national writer, is joking with me. He's like, I'm glad I read your story, because I just interviewed Tim Grover, Jordan's trainer, as well. So I'll make sure I don't repeat it. We had a kid who grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, who covers the Royals. And he did a story on Jordan's Birmingham Barons thing. Well, we also had a Birmingham Barons story coming. You know, he is just, the effect in Chicago is interesting because he's just not around anymore. So basically Michael Jordan exists now as just a comparison, you know, a comparison of, it's so tough to live up to for the Bulls. You know, and it's tough really for any team. If you want to be considered like the greatest of all time, the greatest in Chicago, they have to be compared, you know, to Michael Jordan's Bulls. They live on in he lives on in memory. Now, the only way he's really around anymore is they moved the statue, which I was kind of disappointed by. It used to be outside in the parking lot, and that was just like really in the parking lot of the United Center. Nothing special about that. But it was cool because anyone could just go there at any time and take a picture with it. Now they put it inside like a brand new atrium they built outside the United Center. Still free to get in, but it's just not I'm a believer of statues belonging outside. And that's it. He has a steakhouse, but it's not a big deal. It's not like Ditka's. It's just like a steakhouse and a hotel on Michigan Avenue. I don't really know anyone who goes there that's not like there for a wedding or tourists, you know, some tourist that's staying at that hotel. And he's not around anymore. His house is vacant. It's actually, I live in the suburbs now, and I live like a couple miles from it. So I went there before the first, just to, I wanted to see if people like left flowers or anything or something cool before the first episode aired. No one did anything. But the house is still there with the 23 on the gates. And you know, none of his kids live here. I don't know if his ex-wife still lives here, but we don't see him. He doesn't really come around that much. And, you know, there's a Nike, there's a Jordan store on Michigan Avenue that's pretty cool. But, you know, so I think this has kind of really stirred everything up again. You know, and everyone's got a story. Every reporter that covered them's got a story. Every, you know, we're like, we're really, I'm going to make a list of every single person who's interviewed in the past month as best I can, because it's like, I mean, people are throwing out names of people I've never heard of in my life. You know, I made a joke in my story that like, this has caused TV producers to be like, hey, do you have Scott Burrell's number? Like,
right.
Scott Burrell, who the heck has thought about, he had 1 year on the Bulls and he's become like a major character in this movie, in this documentary. So it is nostalgia theater like I've never seen in Chicago. So it's kind of cool, though.
No, John, listen, it's a different, unique perspective. And I think kind of going back and looking at it from an economic standpoint and still seeing the impact that it's having, it's a great article. So make sure you go on The Athletic, John Greenberg. We were raking it in, what life was like in the Michael Jordan economy. John, I appreciate your time, and thank you for joining the show. All right.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. That's John Greenberg right there. Appreciate his time. Appreciate Brad Turner's time a little bit earlier today as well. Okay. When we come back, we got our Power Five. Funch, let's do this. Let's rank. You know, this was a conversation throughout the show. If there's one moment, one way to best represent Kobe Bryant, how would you best represent that statue outside of Staples Center that we all know eventually is going to be there? We'll go through our top five. If you want to be a part of the show, 877-710-ESPN, and also on Twitter, at Alan Sliwa. Thanks for tuning in. This is Lakers Talk on 710-ESPN. You know, I really mean this when I say it. For doing sports right now without sports, no question about it, it's a challenge. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It definitely is. But Lakers basketball, something about Lakers talk. I feel like, Funch, I can do this any day, any time of the week. There's just always good conversations because I know, you know, people in L.A. and who listen to the show, there's genuine interest in Los Angeles Lakers basketball all the time.
It seems like in my world, you know, 24/7, 365, everybody wants to talk about the Lakers.
No, I know. I know. And listen, I'm, you know, working on the Sliwa show, and don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a lot of work, and it's an incredible amount of adjustments. I mean, right when I started doing Sliwa show 5 days a week, Funch, that's when all this went down. So it's like trying to figure this out also without sports. But anytime I talk Los Angeles Lakers basketball, do you know what? There's just like a comfort level. And it's good to get out of your comfort zone because that's when you're really learning something new and it's challenging. But man, Lakers basketball, I still look forward to Mondays as if the season was going on. Of course, I know the circumstances are different. Okay, let's do some Power Five. Okay, Funch, this is what we're going to do. Top five statue ideas for Kobe Bryant outside of Staples Center. We know it's going to eventually happen. There's many, many different Kobe moments that you just look at my Twitter feed. There's plenty on there. People have such great ideas of moments to them they think would make a fantastic statue outside of Staples and a great representation of Kobe. We'll start with you. What's your number five, ranking your top five? By the way, no right or wrong answers. This is a tough thing to do to figure this out.
Number five for me, I don't think anyone's ever thought about this yet, but the death stare, the Kobe death stare.
The Kobe death stare. You know, one guy was talking about the Kobe where he's kind of showing the teeth. Are you talking about that?
No,
or something different?
It's a total death stare. Just Google Kobe death stare.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's your number five. My number five, I think I like that free throw idea. as my number five. The free throw idea was Kobe at the line. And this kind of started the whole conversation. Kobe got his first points at the free throw line, his last points at the free throw line. He had 81. When he got 81, he did that from the line to close it off. The Achilles tear, he goes up and he shoots two free throws. I'll go with that as my number five.
Number four for me, it's an old pitcher of Kobe Bryant when he was wearing number eight, and he's he's about to reverse dunk. A lot of people, it's an iconic picture if you kind of look at it. I mean, it's one of Kobe's most downloaded pictures, I suppose.
Okay, number four for me, I'm gonna go Kobe with one finger up in the sky after the 81 points. At Pharaoh Space God, that was one of his ideas on Twitter. A couple other people had that idea as well. That's pretty clean, you know, just simple. Kobe, one finger up, you know, up in the sky, and we know just how iconic Kobe obviously was for the Lakers, but that was a special moment for the Lakers franchise, and then he'd eventually go win two more championships. What's your number three?
I don't know when this happened, but there's one photo of Kobe Bryant. He's grabbing his jersey, and he's just putting the Laker logo out. Like, he's pulling his shirt out with the Laker logo on it, and I don't
know. He's tearing it?
It's
with
not,
Vic in the background? Vic the Brick in the background?
No, it's not the one where, it's not the heart photo, but it's the one where he's just sort of just grabbing the Lakers logo on his chest and kind of just pulling it out.
Okay. Man, this is not easy. I'm going to go number three for me. I'm going to go something that incorporates Kobe with Gigi. So something. And there were plenty of ideas on Twitter that were highlighting that. So I'm going to go some type of incorporation with the two of them. Maybe it is them both sitting courtside like they were, but something along those lines. What's your number two?
I got a quick honorable mention before I get to my number two.
Sounds good.
Matt Barnes ball flinch. If you can somehow get like a ball, but without Matt Barnes, and just have Kobe just, you know,
one inch away from Kobe's nose.
Exactly, man. It'd be great. But anyway, number two for me is standing on a table after winning the fifth championship with his arms out, with the ball in his hand, and you see all the confetti dropping. And it's just, it's awesome, man.
I'm with you on that one. That's my number two, Kobe after game seven. And that's such an iconic moment for Kobe because, look, we knew what that meant to him. It meant they just beat the Boston Celtics that had beat the Lakers, you know, 2 years before. It also meant championship number five and put him in this category with Lakers. Obviously, Magic's got five with the Lakers. Kareem has five with the Lakers. It put him in this rare category. Shaquille O'Neal had four total, so it was one extra over Shaq. That's a special, special moment. He's always said that's been his favorite championship. So I'm with you on number two. What's number one for you?
Number one for me is showing the heart after, I think the playoff series versus Phoenix, or a playoff win over Phoenix where he, you know, takes off
that buzzer beater.
The buzzer beater, you know, he kind of shows halfway his chest and shows his heart, you know, like saying that I have heart to do this. And that's probably my favorite one ever.
I didn't think that was going to be my number one, and you mentioned it when we were taking some of the calls, and a few of the callers had mentioned that iconic moment as well. Not going to lie, I think I'm with you on this one. That wasn't something that kind of jumped out to me, but I think it tells so much about Kobe. I always say this when I talk about Kobe. I always mention that he wanted to win more than fans did, right? He cared. He was more competitive than anyone was on the court. So on a day-to-day basis, it didn't matter who the competition was. They didn't want to win more than Kobe Bryant did. So in a sense, that's an iconic moment where if that's your statue outside of Staples Center, it makes a whole lot of sense. The one requirement, you got to be able to represent number 8 and number 24. So if it's two statues or a statue that represents both of those numbers, that's obviously an important thing to do. So, Funch, I think I'm with you. I think you sold me. I think that's my number one as well. Okay, so just a quick reminder. Tomorrow, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ will start things off at 6 a.m. in the morning. If you miss any part of the show, download it. Lakers Talk Podcast on the ESPN app or on iTunes. Also, Sedano will follow the morning show. And then Will Kane, Mason and Ireland, and then I'll follow after that. LA, as always, greatly appreciate you guys tuning in. Hopefully we're getting sports and we're moving in the right direction. Have a great rest of your night.